Hello and welcome back to the Drinking Liberally podcast, the show that combines good alcohol with some friendly political banter. I'm Kevin Wilson. I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Fenner.
How's everyone doing?
Jeff, it's been a busy week. I've been gone for a little while.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I had actually missed our debate party last week, unfortunately.
It was sad.
Yeah, I was disappointed to miss it, but I was having a good time upstate New York camping.
That's awesome.
Caught some fish. It's a good time.
Nice. Turned out great, the debate party.
I know. And if I'm going to say right off the top, if our listeners haven't already, check out the previous episode. Jeff, Dennis, and Yogs interviewed a few of the guests that were at the debate party, and it came out great. They had a lot of interesting things to say. They were great guests. I'm excited to have them on in the future. I think we should bring them back.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like it was a good time. Again, jealous I wasn't there, but you really held down the fort. Thanks, man.
No problem. I think it turned out so well that, you know, for the listeners out there, if you're in the area, we're going to do this again. The upcoming debates or any kind of special things going on. We showed a lot of interest from people that showed up and didn't and wanting to get involved and be at these kind of viewing parties together going forward. So,
yeah, we've created kind of a mailing list now, which is exciting.
Yeah, so, no, it's really great.
We're at the big time. All right, Jeff, you ready for some news and brews?
I am, sir.
Let's jump into it then. This week, we are drinking the Ubu Ale from the Lake Placid Brewery. This is one of my favorite breweries in America. Of all the craft places I visited, this one holds a special place in my heart. I'll tell a little bit about that after we discuss the beer itself. But the Ubu Ale is an English-style strong ale. It pours a deep reddish-brown color, Jeff, as you see here.
Yep.
The brewery says there's no added flavors to this beer, which is incredible to me, if true. They say all the flavor comes from just the combination of grains in here because it's really got this strong, like, caramel, chocolate, a little bit of chocolate flavor to it that I'm very impressed that they were able to come up with a combination that, you know, just made this naturally. It's really creamy.
Yeah, I've never had a beer like this. It kind of reminds me of, and not exact, but it's kind of the taste of like a White Russian.
Sure.
It's just, yeah, it's a little thicker.
Yeah.
You got that kind of chocolate, not chocolate milk taste that you got the White Russian, but kind of that. It kind of invokes that taste in your taste buds.
Absolutely. You got that the mouth feel of it. And it's definitely on the maltier side, not very hoppy or bitter, and finishes pretty dry.
Yeah.
This is, again, one of my favorite breweries. This is one of my favorite beers from them. My wife and I love this beer so much, we had it at our wedding. During the ceremony, we right behind all the rows of chairs, we had coolers filled with this.
Nice.
That the guests were able to just bring up and, you know, drink while they had to sit through our ceremony.
That was very nice of you.
Yeah. Figured if they're going to be there sitting out in the sun and on a sandy beach there, they should have something to drink. Something nice and refreshing. So, again, I love this beer. Everything they make over that brewery is pretty fantastic. This is the Ubu Ale, named after the chocolate lab that is pictured on the label of this beer. There's some legend about this gigantic chocolate lab that lived up in that area, and that's what it's named after. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But fantastic beer. Check it out if you're ever in the area. Lake Placid Brewing Company. I was able to pick this up because I was camping up in northern New York last week. So I made sure to stop by and bring some of this back down to Jersey with me.
It's pretty smooth. What's the alcohol content on that?
It's actually 7%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's high.
I'm actually surprised by that.
Yeah, it is high. A lot of the beers they make are up there in the ABV category. But
it doesn't hit you like it's at that level, not. That's for sure. No. It's a little thick. I don't know if you could drink, you know, five of those in a row necessarily, but
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
But you know what? To each their own.
Yeah, good after dinner beer. I like
absolutely.
It. Yeah.
Love this beer. So with that, let's jump into our topics of the week. Number one on our list, because I'm a little jealous I was left out of last week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about the debates. We did an hour, Jeff did an hour special that was released this past Monday on the debates. But I'm just going to give you my thoughts because I'm egotistical.
Perfect. I mean, obviously, you heard the episode we did. We definitely had some quick reactions right after on winners and losers. So, Kevin, I'd actually like to hear kind of where you fell after watching the two nights. Obviously, in that podcast, we focused a little bit on night two because that's what we just watched.
Sure.
But because we didn't talk about night one, if you could start there, because we really didn't get into that, and we can go from there.
Yeah, so I guess winners, we'll break it down by night, I guess. So Night one, I'm going to consider anyone a winner that increased their cachet via their performance, right? And the clear winner of night one is Elizabeth Warren. Or Elizabeth, I have a plan for that, Warren. She ran away with the first half of that debate, crushed it with policy descriptions. She had an answer for everything. I'm not really surprised. When I saw the lineup, we talked on a previous episode, I was like, well, she's de facto winner on this. Like, why? Just give her the bye week and let her move on to the next round. But I think this did get her onto a national stage that's going to excite some voters and get her a little more recognition nationally. My other winner, and I'm judging this strictly based on who I think grew their polling percentage the most. And we'll see if this bears out, but this is just my guess, that Julian Castro, I think, probably is going to have a little more name recognition after all of this. Wasn't the leader in talk time by any means, but he definitely had a few standout moments, in particular while he was attacking Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, big moment.
On immigration. I think he really stood out, and I've always liked Castro, but that made me think, wow, he actually is a serious contender. Do I think he's going to be president? I don't think so, but I think he actually belonged up on that stage, unlike some of the other people.
Yeah, I do wish in his moment there that he would have, when he was naming off the policy names and stuff like that. I don't know if that's the stage for that, if he's going to try to get over with the average voter. I think that might have been his only slip up. And again, that's critiquing what was a really good performance.
I think that's entirely valid, though.
But I do think that as we go forward, I'm sure he's got some good people in his camp. He had a great moment there, and it could have been a lot better if it was a little more simplified, to be fair. But I agree with you on Warren. Obviously, we didn't, again, talk about night one. I think that all she could do here was lose.
Yeah.
Like, she was in a tough position because she wasn't on the loaded stage. She just wasn't, based on polling numbers. So I think she did a good job. She held serve, which is what she needed to do there.
Yeah, did everything she had to. Those would be the two clear winners in my mind. I do have, I guess I'd categorize them as runner-ups in this, and Cory Booker be one of them. For the most part, he did have a lot of talking time. I didn't look in actual numbers on who talked most, but he was way up there.
I felt
got,
so, yeah.
Yeah, got a lot of camera time. Most of it was just the normal Cory Booker rhetoric that you're used to if you're a New Jersey native, that you've seen before, you're pretty familiar with. But what I liked was when he got impassioned about guns, about gun control. At that moment, I was like, yes, be more of that, Cory Booker. If you can talk about every issue with that kind of passion, then people will take notice. So that's why I'm putting him in the runner-up category here, because I think that kind of pushed the needle a little in his favor.
I'm glad you said that, because I hadn't actually thought about that, but I tried to think of what came off on him before that I didn't like gravitate towards. I think that's right. Like, there was just a little lack of passion behind what he was saying. So that's a really good point. I didn't even think about it until you just said it, but I agree with you. That's a good reason to put him right where you put him.
And Booker's an interesting candidate. And I think I said this when we did our initial breakdown, geez, probably a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Wow, how things have changed.
Yeah. But one of the things I believe I mentioned in that episode was that Booker has this problem where he comes off as a little cheesy. But knowing him from New Jersey over the last few years, I've come to recognize that that's actually sincere. And my native New Yorker blood, the cynical personality that I have, sees someone that is cheesy like that, and I immediately think they're a fraud. And I had to take a step back and be like, all right, this guy genuinely believes in what he's saying, and he is sincere, and I'm the asshole.
Yeah, I mean, he's had moments, like the moment when he was releasing those documents and he was...
His Spartacus moment, right?
Yeah, and he was just like, fine, fire me. These are going out. Yeah. So, I mean, we have seen this in him. Not to make your point for you, but I do feel like we don't see that from him all the time.
Yeah, I would love to see more of it. I think he'd have... he'd be in a better polling position right now if he was that guy all the time. So that's why I'm putting him as a runner-up. And this one, this might be a hot take based on the previous episode. I heard you guys yelling about this, but I'm going to put Bill de Blasio as a runner-up in this first night of debates. Not because I necessarily support him or think he's the best candidate, but I think he did a great job of getting his name out there on a national stage. So I'm going to give him some credit there. He certainly fought for his time.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're from New York. That's
yeah.
He's got that in him for sure.
Absolutely.
I will give myself some credit because I was our producer was very interested in why I picked de Blasio as one of our trivia candidates.
Oh, right. Yeah,
remember?
Cruz, yeah.
I was mocked slightly by him for picking a lower level candidate, and now it fits. We were fine to discuss him that day.
He was borne out. Well done.
Thanks.
And that's night one. Honestly, I feel like everyone else was irrelevant.
Yeah, no one jumped out, especially not the way that night two just had. I just feel like more happened.
Yeah, let's talk about night two then. The biggest winner, in my mind, person that increased their name recognition, and I assume will certainly be jumping up in the polls after it, is Kamala Harris.
Not close.
I feel like that's the easiest take I've ever had to make on this show. but she dominated the stage every single time she was on the mic. She waited out everyone else as they screamed over each other. And I was like, all right, you guys can quiet down. Now I'm going to shine. And she took her time to really lay out, I think, some very moving and at times personal stories that I think really resonated. Certainly drew a lot of applause from the audience, so clearly connected there. We could talk about the audience in just a bit.
Please.
But clearly the number one winner there is Harris. So I feel like everyone else has to be a runner-up, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, and I think I said this, the number one word, and I watched it back again, that came to me was control. I think she was in control up there.
Oh, definitely.
Not only of herself and not getting into screaming matches, kind of waiting stuff out, but I also think she was just in control of that stage. You know, she
commanded it.
She grew the most on me of any candidate that we've had so far. I mean, that was a great night for her.
Yeah, I think so. And my wife was really happy to see that because Harris is actually one of her favorite candidates right now.
Nice.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, everyone else just kind of has to fall into the runner-up category just because of how dominant a performance Harris had. And I'm going to... Night two is a little different because I feel like the runner-ups are just anyone that didn't hurt their cause. And there's a few people in this list. I don't think Mayor Pete hurt his cause.
Nope.
I think he kind of comes out of this even.
He actually did really well in a couple moments and then had a little bit of a tougher moment that maybe leveled it. I think he did really well.
I think he's even... I think Bernie Sanders comes out about even. You kind of know what you're getting with him at this point. He's stuck by what he's been saying for years. So if you support him years ago, you still support him now, I'm sure, because he really doesn't change his rhetoric.
He did have the one big point where he did admit that, you know, his plan for healthcare will be a tax on the middle class.
Yeah, so you could tell that it pained him that he's like, I know how this is going to come off.
Yep.
And how people are going to perceive this.
That's a tough thing to have to do when you've got 10 people on stage. But we'll
absolutely
get into that.
So, you know, Pete, Bernie, this is going to be a hot take.
And
I'm going to say that Biden actually walks away from this without any damage done to his campaign. And I know every story out there right now is about how Harris destroyed Joe Biden and called him out on racist policies and his collaboration with segregationists decades ago. But I'll probably get some hate mail for this. I'm going to stand up for Joe Biden right now.
Okay.
On this. Yeah.
I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
Well, my hot take is I completely disagree with you, so go there.
I don't think that's a hot take, though. I think this is, I think you're in the, at least in the Twitter universe, you're in the majority. So while I understand what Harris was going for, and I think it was a very powerful moment, I think knocking Joe Biden for working with segregationists in a time where there were a lot of them, Democrats included, is a little unfair. I think it's something he had to do to get anything done. He had to work with people in the Senate that he despised. And it's unfortunate, but he did manage to get things done. What I think Biden tripped up on was his response to it. Clearly, he's caught off guard by a fellow Democrat calling him out. And I know Harris prefaced it by saying, I don't think you're a racist. But the implication to saying that is the unsaid, but you did this racist thing. Or you supported some racist thing, which is the case here. So again, if I'm coming off kind of measured right now in how I'm speaking, it's because I understand how delicate of a topic this is. But I think Joe Biden's record since should be taken into account. And I think the context of his original collaboration with some despicable people in the Senate should also be taken into account. That said, where I'm not going to give Joe Biden credit is his response about the busing issue, because Kamala gave him an out and said, would you still support that today? And the easy answer is no, of course not. Times have changed. I have changed. We understand that's not the world we live in anymore. No way would I support blocking that today. Instead, he got really defensive. And I think that's why a lot of people are looking at Biden as having lost this debate because of this one moment. It's all about his response to it. And I understand if you want this guy to be, you know, president of the United States, you want him to be able to give nice measured responses without becoming defensive the way Trump does about everything. I shouldn't even equate the two because it's night and day.
And but, we don't, you know what you're saying, though. It's not
right.
You're not putting those in the same group.
But again, like Biden, all he had to say was, no, of course I don't support that today. That's ridiculous. Things have changed. And if you look at my record, you would understand that. And then he could rattle off the things he supported, which he started to do, but it almost came off as a little nonsensical in the moment. He looked a little flustered by it.
I think he lost not because of the actual topic there, right? You're going to look back on history with anybody that's been in politics, and they're going to have to work with people on the other side of the aisle that don't exactly support what they think. That's the way it goes.
Absolutely.
When you look back on this administration and people working with Paul Ryan and different people in it.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. You have to do it to get some of this stuff passed to move our country forward. I think he's a loser he's a loser of this debate, not a loser.
Loser.
Yeah. I just think the arrogance of it. You just said he looked surprised to be attacked on this. That's incredible to me. This is the number one talking point that he should have thought was coming up.
Sure.
That'd have been like Pete getting attacked on the police shootings and having no idea it was
coming.
And
being flabbergasted by it. Sure.
That's okay. Incredible.
I think that's a good analogy.
You know, so I think he really tripped up there. I just think he's got an arrogance about him, about these topics, that it's just really off-putting. Like, he's just above it. Why are you questioning him? So I think that's why he doesn't figure into runner-up status. I think he was in the same shoes as Bernie and Warren, right? Where you're in the top three right now, number one of that top three by most polls. Just don't lose this situation. Don't be surprised if somebody comes after you, because they need to come after you. And he knows he's going to be in the top three when we get down to that. So don't have a night like tonight. And he did. And I think the polls, I think he's going to take a little hit here. I really do.
Yeah. All Biden had to do, like Warren and Bernie, was tread water. You're already ahead. Just don't mess up. Give the normal answers and you'll be fine. I'm not so sure he'll take a hit. I'd be interested to see. I know they've released one already where he did take a hit, but I want to see additional polls that corroborate that information rather than just go based off of a single poll. Where he'll have to worry is if he sees his numbers with Black Americans dropping,
yeah.
Which right now he's got a very high approval rating. If he starts losing that support, then he needs to really start worrying. If you're a Biden supporter, I wouldn't start worrying until you see numbers like that start to plummet.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think he takes any kind of hit here with the group that was staunchly behind him, just that he's the best candidate to take Trump down, right? Forget about policies, forget about all that. But now we saw him on a debate stage get pressed on something and not handle it well. Now, if you take that same tack and you're on a debate stage with Trump, I mean, if that's our guy for that reason, do you think there's any hit he takes with those supporters?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And here's why. Because Joe Biden's taking hits from progressives. He knows what Donald Trump's about. Donald Trump and Republicans aren't about much. And they're pretty set in their ways. So it's easy to predict what their attacks are. Like, Donald Trump is not attacking Joe Biden about racism.
Right. But my overarching question isn't about that exact thing. He got attacked there on something we both agree that he should have probably known was coming. Maybe not that aggressive from Harris, but it threw him off, obviously.
I mean, definitely did.
We watched it happen. We need someone up there, because I'll tell you, Trump might not attack him on this. He's going to find something of this nature to hammer him with. I want to know he can handle that pressure on the stage and be ready for it.
I think that's a valid concern, certainly. I still think in my heart of hearts that he understands just as well, if not better than a lot of the other candidates, what kind of person Donald Trump is. And I think he can stand up to him. And I'm saying this as an Elizabeth Warren supporter.
Right.
Like, Joe Biden is by no means my favorite candidate in this election. I still think he beats Donald Trump if he ends up being the nominee. Who knows? He might actually be our best chance at beating Donald Trump at this point because he does have such name recognition and high support in those swing states. I think he'd be more prepared for Donald Trump because it's easier to prepare for your enemies than your friends, you know?
Well, he better get ready because these aren't his friends going forward.
I agree.
he's right now wearing the crown as our likely candidate from at this point, just based on polling numbers. So I hope in the next debate he's ready to go.
So that's our, you know, winners. Let's talk about some losers then.
Oh, boy.
There's a bunch of them.
Yep.
But we don't have all day, so I'm going to run through it quick. The biggest one for me is Beto O'Rourke because I think he had the most to lose, and he did.
Yep.
He looked wholly unprepared, and the times that he was speaking, it came off as canned and not that off-the-cuff Beto that gave an answer about players kneeling immediately and can just do that. This was not the Beto that lives in the moment that we've seen before that I think attracted a lot of people to his campaign. So he really took a hit here.
Do you think it's because he had nothing to climb on when he was talking?
I mean, he had the podium. He could have just climbed on top of that.
Got to be comfortable.
I would have loved the shit out of it.
You got to be comfortable in front of public speaking. It would have been
so good.
Now, he wasn't ready, and this is actually bad for our party in general. That's somebody that we can't have take a major hit in this because he is part of the future of our party in one way or another.
Definitely.
And we want him to look strong even if he's not necessarily the candidate this year. But yeah.
So I'll say he was the biggest. I put Kirsten Gillibrand also up on that list. She spent a lot of time fighting for attention, talking over other people. And then when she finally got her time to shine and the solo spotlight, everything she said came off as just written talking points rather than something from the heart. That's something that's fixable. So I'm not counting her out yet, but I don't think she had a great debate.
If you've listened to earlier podcasts from us, I have nothing to add.
Yeah. And then just two others real quick. Swallow from California.
Womp womp.
And his torch diatribe. And the fact that he kept bringing it up, you could not come off as more canned and pre-prepared than he did in these debates. He literally just, he clamored, he talked over people, demanded time, and then when they gave him time, just kept going to these just pre-written responses that rang so hollow and so pre-prepared that like I cringed and I felt bad for this man.
It's almost like someone in his camp was like, this is how we're going to do this tonight. Just try to dominate it, try to pull time. And then once he got it, it's almost like they didn't take the next step on telling him what to do once he got it. And he was like, oh, you are giving me this time. Yeah, I wish Yang would have got that time.
Yeah, Yang I'd put actually, he's kind of in that list of losers too.
He's too determined to me. Yeah. Let's see what happens next time.
He didn't have a lot of talking time, and I don't think he utilized the time he got the best of his advantage. Pretty much everyone else that was on the stage falls into that losers list, including Marianne Williamson, the author, who I think did not make much of her time at all.
The funny thing is most of those losers that we have, we kind of want to go back to their states and run for positions, right? In the Senate or be a governor, be a mayor, whatever you could do to help. I'd like her not to do any of those things and go write another book.
And maybe this does help her out with a book tour or a future book. She can
My
write
time on the debate time. Stage.
Absolutely.
Great. Wrote the title for you. Have a good time.
Finally, I think the biggest loser of this entire situation is just this entire format of the debates. I despise how this was set up. 20 people is way too many. I know you talked about that on the previous episode. You called it a clusterfuck. I think that's entirely accurate. There's way too many people on stage. They had at most 4 people each night that deserved to be there, in my mind, and that had a commanding enough presence and the ability to articulate their policy in a way that is deserving of a national spotlight. So I don't want to see another 10-person debate again in my entire life. You know, cap it. 5 people a night, whatever, and extend the amount of time they have. Because how many times we hear the moderators cut people off and be like, sorry, you're done. I'm like, well, I actually kind of want to hear more about that. More and more people are tuning into politics now than ever.
Like watching a car crash.
There. Right. Yeah. It's a lot like that. I don't think we have to worry about fitting this entire debate into an hour or 2-hour format anymore. If this is a 4-hour thing, people are going to watch it anyway, or they're going to get the now this video montage of it the next day.
Well, that's what confused me so much. And overall, I think the biggest loser of this was the DNC, because this many, their rules put this many candidates on the stage. But a couple of months ago, we had these town halls that were starting at like 6 p.m. and ended at like 11 p.m. And people were staying up and watching that. So now, like, when it gets really important, we're going to cut it to 2 hours, have commercials and audience applause for 20 minutes. Terrible job. And it's, you know, only the most important election of our entire lifetimes. And they had no idea what to do here. I don't know if this was, if the DNC had any say on the format of this in terms of the hours, the audience, commercials, that kind of stuff. But I do know they had a say in setting up who was eligible to be in these debates. Mm-hmm. And they did a terrible job.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. You brought up the topic of the audience, and man, can we just cut audiences, live audiences, from all these debates?
Why is that needed?
We don't need it. If they're going to be there, put them behind like a soundproof wall or something. I'm sick of people talking strictly for applause lines.
That's what I was going to say. Not only is it not needed, but I think it negatively affects the debate.
Absolutely. Because
people are going for the one-liner shots.
Exactly.
To get a crowd reaction. This is not the Village Underground Comedy Club.
I think we're past that this point. We understand and we know when we're being pandered to. And I can tell immediately the second someone gets on their little diatribe, whether I agree with it or not, I'm like, oh, here comes the applause that we're going to have to wait for. Like, you just know.
The one-liner, it was bad.
And I hate that. I've hated that for a long time. I don't like seeing it in any kind of debate at any stage of the game. Get rid of the audience.
It brought me to Trump's rallies and mm-hmm. his taglines that he knew. Like, if he knows he's screwing up somewhere and the crowd's not behind him, he'll just throw out a "Make America Great Again"
or build a wall,
arrest her.
Yep.
Like, and that's what it felt like to me, that it kind of implored these candidates to get an applause line, because they know that big eruption of applause is probably going to play on CNN and Fox and CNBC over and over again, because it's a big hitter. And that's not good for this. We need the actual information.
I think we should be past the point of speaking for sound bites and talking about actual policies at this time and how it affects Americans. But before we move off the debates, I have to bring this up because it is despicable. And it's Don Trump Jr.'s tweet that came out during the debates. And he retweeted someone else's tweet that said, "Kamala Harris is implying she's descended from American black slaves. She's not. She comes from Jamaican slave owners. That's fine. She's not an American black, period." I'm going to let that stew for a second there, because holy shit.
Well, let's also look at, before you get into the actual stuff, the person he retweeted was like a name with 64 digits after it.
Right.
It was like 108007631 Kim.
Yeah. So he retweeted a bot. Before we continue on, any listeners that aren't familiar with that, if you're on Twitter or Instagram and you see a username like that, that's like Kevin with 1,000 digits after, it's not a real person. It's always a bot.
Yeah.
So just keep that in the back of your mind when you see inflammatory tweets or Instagram posts or Facebook posts or things like that. And if their account username has all these digits at the end of it, it means a computer generated it.
Or click on it and see that they just created it 1 month ago.
Sure.
Have one follower. But they made a collage of these, and that exact same, verbatim tweet was done by thousands of accounts.
Right. It was a coordinated botnet effort to create another birtherism controversy, this time not about Obama, but now about Kamala Harris, because her parents weren't born in America. But Kamala was, which by our Constitution means you are a United States citizen and eligible to run for president. End of story.
We're getting back into birtherism.
It's ridiculous. I thought we'd be past this. Did I think we'd be past? No. But
just call it what it is. It's racist.
It's racist,
to the highest court.
Yeah. No one was making these botnet arguments and criticizing Ted Cruz, who was born in Canada. Because Ted Cruz's parents were born in America.
Right.
So he's an American citizen. The difference here, if you haven't noticed, is that the two people they've used it against happen to be black.
Interesting.
Yeah. Might be something to that, huh?
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Might be unveil a little bit about their motivations.
So before we get off the debates, though, there was one more thing that came up. It was on busing. Obviously, that happened with Biden. The whole thing went down. But Trump had to weigh in on busing. Somebody asked him. You want to read the quote?
Sure. Jesus. As we discussed before, Kamala Harris attacked Biden on his busing stance, and we didn't dive really into what that is. So if you're not familiar with it, I'll put it in the footnotes so you can get a background on what busing means historically. But Trump says it's, quote, something that they've done for a long period of time. You know, there aren't that many ways you're going to get people to schools. It is certainly a primary method of getting people to schools, Trump said. So Trump is confusing.
He's not confusing. This is so stupid. He's not confusing because he doesn't know what the
Right. You have to understand what the other version was.
He really thinks the yellow school bus that shows up in front of your house.
Yeah. Trump is talking about actual physical bus transportation as a method of getting people from place to place, saying, yes, of course I support that. Instead of understanding the context of the question, which is the idea that minority students had to be bused to schools to desegregate them.
I think going any further on this is an affront to our listeners' intelligence.
Yeah.
We just wanted to throw out his quote, but
my God.
I don't think we need to explain that any further. Kind of funny, but also terrifying.
Yeah. In the great book of dumb Trump quotes, it's way up there. Moving on, we're going to hit up our quiz of the week. I know last week we said we were probably going to get off the candidate talk, but I just had this one just stood out so much in the debates. We had to add an extra round of Democratic candidate trivia.
We can't let this election cycle go by without having this quiz. We just can't do it.
We'd be doing a disservice to everybody.
And the American people.
Yeah, the American people. All of them that listen. This week, we're going to have our producer, Yogs, on the hot seat. We're going to be asking him questions about one of the candidates from night two of the debates, Marianne Williamson. Yogs, are you ready for this one?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Did you watch the debates?
I did.
You did. So you're familiar with Williamson and her performance?
Very much so. And if Tina Fey does not do a performance of her one day, we'd have all lost. So.
Yeah. There has to be someone on SNL. Like Kate McKinnon must have a great impression lined up already. For anyone that's new, we're going to ask our buddy Yogs here 5 questions about this candidate. There'll be multiple choice. He will answer them. And if he gets them right, Jeff and I will drink. If he gets them wrong, he drinks. Pretty simple drinking game. Yagnish, are you ready for question number 1?
Yes.
Williamson went to Pomona College in California. What did she major in? Was it A, English literature, B, theater and philosophy, C, journalism, or D, British literature?
D, British literature.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. She actually majored in theater and philosophy.
Tough break.
All right, bad start, but now's the chance to redeem yourself, man.
All right, Yogs. She dropped out her junior year and moved to New York City to pursue a career as A, a novelist, B, a singer, C, a playwright, or D, a chef?
It's either A or C. I'm going to go with A.
A, novelist?
This is not correct.
Damn.
She went to be a singer in the nightclubs in New York City.
Yeah. Damn. Well, bad, real bad start, man. Take another sip of that drink. You get this one wrong, you do 3 in a row wrong, I'm going to make you finish that whole drink.
All right.
In 1991, she officiated the wedding of Elizabeth Taylor and Elizabeth's 7th husband. Who was the best man at that wedding? I know, I'm sorry. This isn't necessarily political or related to her, but it's just too funny.
But it made sense because of her performance.
Was that best man A, Michael Jackson, B, Eddie Murphy, C, Macaulay Culkin, or D, Arsenio Hall?
I'm going to say Macaulay Culkin.
That is incorrect, my friend. The answer is actually A, Michael Jackson was the best man in that wedding. Everyone else on the list actually attended as well. So it seems like it's a pretty fun time. But
sounds like a great wedding.
It's a pretty star-studded
Sometimes
affair.
Sometimes wedding number 7 needs...
You shouldn't have picked Bacardi 151 for your drink on this, man. Yeah, it's not going well for you.
Sorry, man. All right. Do a couple chugs of that.
All right.
If I have
number
to.
4. She's an author known for writing what kind of books? A, murder mysteries, B, self-help, C, romance, or D, historical fiction?
Historical fiction.
Incorrect.
Wow, 0 for 4.
Wow, self-help is the answer.
One of her books.
She'd be so good at that, though.
One of her books, Oprah Winfrey credited with bringing 154 miracles into her life. That's a true quote.
If Oprah says it, it must be true.
Yeah, I'm down with it.
Yeah.
What a shame.
All right, can you avoid the offer?
Wow.
Probably not. Let's find out.
considering my knowledge of Marianne Williamson seems to be a zero. So it should only match.
As it should be.
Well, let's get a lucky one.
All right. This artist wrote a song for Williamson's failed 2014 bid for Congress titled Today. So what artist wrote the song Today? Is it A, Tori Amos, B, Bono, C, Jewel, or D, Alanis Morissette?
I'm going to go with Jewel.
Incorrect. Oh, it was actually
our first ofer.
Wow, Alanis Morissette is the correct answer. Yogs, you are our first ofer on the show. 0 for 5. That is impressive.
Congratulations.
I've got like a 6-pack in the fridge. I think you have to finish all of them.
Well, what you guys don't know is I put a bet on myself, basically.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. So this was fixed from the get go, and now I'm rich. So thank you.
This is Exhibit A, why she should not be our presidential candidate.
No one knows anything about her.
If you guys are really bored, though, go out there and just look through the facts of her. As we were putting this quiz together, what an extraordinary life!
Incredible.
She was married for like 15 minutes in the 70s once and got it annulled. Like, just a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff there.
She's got a lot of interesting, like, you know, pro women's rights activism, which is commendable. But she also has a lot of weird things like anti-vax stuff in her in her background. So
I mean, there's a lot of good in there also. We just tried to pick some of the lighthearted stuff on this one.
Absolutely.
Well, let's give the credit where it's due to her supporters who got her to that 1% so she could be on that national stage. So you guys are the real heroes that made that happen.
All right, let's move on to our last major topic of the show this week. And that's going to be Donald Trump's trip abroad for the G20 meeting and his visit to North Korea as well. Let's all lump that together, okay? Trump met with world leaders the last few days and really did nothing to remediate his image when it comes to that buddy-buddy friendly picture we have of him with dictators around the world or human rights violators.
Yeah, before we dive into this, let me just ask you something. Is there a scarier sentence right now than Trump goes abroad to meet with world leaders?
It's bad. A couple of our people during the debate said that he was the biggest national security threat, right?
I don't disagree.
So Donald Trump attended the G20 meeting and was seen palling around with a number of world leaders that, you know, it's bad photo ops, it's bad optics for you to be seen palling around with Mohammed bin Salman from Saudi Arabia, who has been accused of ordering the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. I'm just going to say accused. I feel like there's credible evidence that he ordered this.
Why would you think it's credible? Because our intelligence agency said so?
Because our intelligence agency said it, as well as other allies, including actually a few countries that aren't necessarily our closest allies, also came out and said, no, we've got audio recordings of this, you sawing this man's body apart.
Incredible.
Yeah. So Donald Trump was sitting next to MBS, as we'll call him, Mohammed bin Salman, and was asked a ton of questions about the murder of that journalist. And Trump just repeatedly ignored it, you know, turned away, just said, nope, thank you, thank you, thank you. My God, we got to stop having this guy pal around with some of the worst human beings in the world. MBS should be on the outs. No one should be inviting him to any kind of diplomatic meeting because of his human rights violations and his just blatant disregard for a free press in the globe.
That's a lot bigger of a topic, and obviously Trump wasn't the one that gave him the direct invite, right? So
yes.
Let's not throw that there.
Sure, absolutely. That's fair.
I do think that's a larger topic that needs to be addressed. I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, you have a guy that comes out so unabashedly against somebody like Colin Kaepernick, right, that he's just destroying the culture of America with the kneeling, and then he's just over there just shaking hands with somebody that killed I don't know.
Yeah, a journalist with ties to the Washington Post and, you know, one of the pillars of American democracy and freedom is our freedom of the press.
Yep.
So this is something we should be standing up for and not implicitly condoning by not putting any kind of sanctions or punishment on Saudi Arabia. Instead, we actually rewarded them. We've been selling them arms. Jared Kushner has been talking to them through back channels.
He thanked them for buying the arms from us.
Right.
Thanked them right there. And again, like you said, he was asked right in front of MBS about it. He completely ignored the question. Was later asked if he ignored it, and he said, as you know, I'll offend anybody.
Yeah, I said that to Jim Acosta, right?
Yeah, which we have that quote later, but that was disgusting. And it gets worse.
So prior to that, Donald Trump, that is, was seen palling around with Vladimir Putin, as he often is when he's abroad.
And coincidence?
Look, I get it. You have to interact with Russia.
Of course.
You do. But you have to also be aware of the optics of interacting with Russia, especially everything that's gone on with the Mueller report and Russian interference into the elections. If there's any kind of photo op that comes off as you being buddy-buddy with him, that's going to play poorly.
Like having inside giggly jokes about them not interfering with our elections?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cute.
It's so inappropriate. And as Jeff, you alluded to before, Jim Acosta from CNN asked Donald Trump about that. He said, you know, you seem like you were joking there with the Russian president. Are we taking that to be wrong? He's like, what's with your coziness with some of these dictators and autocrats at all these summits that we go to? And he mentions MBS. He talks about, you know, Putin, and asks flat out, are you afraid of offending them on those subjects? And Trump says, no, not at all. I don't really care about offending people. I sort of thought you'd know that. Just a little jab at Jim Acosta because he's a popular punching bag
for the
Trump administration.
He went harder after. He said, oh, yeah, how are the book sales doing?
Ooh.
This guy.
It's weird how Donald Trump measures success, but that's a topic for another day.
That's a whole podcast.
So these meetings were pretty embarrassing and made worse by the nepotism that the Trump administration continues to show. So he brought his son, Don Jr., and he brought Ivanka.
Another little family trip.
Yeah.
Paid for by us.
Yeah, fantastic. Just another taxpayer-funded vacation for the Trump children here. And I have a problem specifically with Ivanka attending these meetings. Because right now she's just a senior advisor to the White House.
Joke.
Right. And it's a position she would not have if she was not the daughter of the president. She is in no way qualified for this. But then again, a lot of the people in this administration are not qualified for the positions they currently
hold. Are you going out on a limb here?
Not much. Yeah. I just took a little scooch onto the branch. That's okay. It. Good. Not that far out. Ivanka attended a bunch of these bilateral meetings between the United States and foreign powers. She shows up at a bunch of conversations that were so uncomfortable to look. And like, look, I despise Ivanka Trump. I do. I think she's a terrible human being. And even I felt bad watching that video, which we'll link to in our footnotes, of her trying to get in on a conversation with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the French President Macron. She keeps trying to get involved, and they clearly want nothing to do with her because she doesn't belong in that discussion. And it's cringeworthy, and it almost makes me feel bad for her.
Can I give you an analogy?
Sure.
This is like going to Thanksgiving dinner with your family, right? And there's like the kids' table and the adult table.
Right.
And yes. Like one of the kids are like just between adult and children. So they don't really want to hang out with the younger ones. They kind of want to butt in, but no one wants to hear anything they have to say. Right. It's exactly what this made me feel like. Like, no, sorry, you got a couple more years over there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Do something of importance in the political world.
Then, or just go lay on the beach. Yeah. I mean, we're already paying for your vacation. Just go do something else.
So Ivanka put herself in all these meetings and then traveled with her father to the North Korean border afterwards. And we've talked at length in a number of previous episodes about Donald Trump's relationship with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. And just to recap very quickly, I think this is wholly inappropriate that he's even giving the time of day to this dictator. The fact that he is validating Kim Jong-un on the world stage by having what we could say is the most powerful country on earth in the United States meet with this small dictatorship and shake hands with him, that's all Kim Jong-un wants. Like, that's a victory. That's a propaganda victory for Kim Jong-un.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, not to put you on the spot on this.
Yeah.
But what does this mean in North Korea? Can you talk a little bit about what this does?
It's strictly propaganda for Kim Jong-un. He's saying, look,
this is played on every TV.
Absolutely. For eternity. Because he's going to say, look, I know maybe some of you are starving and all that, but it was all for the greater good. Everything I've put you through is great because now the world takes us seriously. Look at this. President of America, our sworn enemy,
walked
is
onto
now
our soil.
Walking on our soil, crossed our border to shake my hand. It adds validity to Kim Jong-un's dictatorship, and that is entirely dangerous.
Yeah, no, that audio is going to get played. Trump called it an honor. An honor. And, you know, I mean, we've seen all the videos of the radio recordings being played and all that stuff. And we don't want to deep dive into this too much. But that's not only dangerous for us, but I feel terrible for the citizens of North Korea that this happened.
Yeah. And it's, you know, in North Korea, if you're stuck there with all of this propaganda blaring at you constantly, you have no access to, you know, free information or freedom of information. You're going to believe that.
Yeah, this is your truth.
Yeah, that's the only thing you know.
Major win for Kim Jong-un.
Absolutely. And Trump did this with no preconditions. He didn't say, okay, give up your nuclear weapons, and then we will elevate you to the world stage. We'll invite you to, you know, attend these summits that we all go to, make you a major player in the UN. He got nothing. No concessions out of North Korea. So what makes anyone in this administration think that North Korea is just going to voluntarily give up their nuclear weapons or stop missile tests solely because Donald Trump shook hands with their leader? It's unrealistic. They're going to keep pushing for more. You give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for some milk, right?
Yeah,
it's
just
going to keep going from there.
The report came out today that the Trump administration is considering a deal to accept North Korea as a nuclear power in exchange for them agreeing to freeze their existing nuclear program. In return, though, the U.S. would remove all the heavy-handed sanctions we put against them.
So we get nothing out of that.
Zero. We say, stop what you're doing now. Stay right where you're at. We'll recognize you, but we'll also remove everything. So we're asking them to denuclearize or stop the missile tests. Nothing.
Right.
And we're going to remove the sanctions?
Everything in this world is just backwards right now,
our
diplomatically.
And the rest of the world, our allies, are rolling their eyes at us.
Which is funny because that's something Trump campaigned on constantly. He has this fear of people laughing at him. And if you go back, just search through his tweets. Use the search function on Twitter and just search for laughing at. And look at the number of times Donald Trump tweets about China is laughing at us. North Korea is laughing at. Russia is laughing. Like, his biggest fear in the world is being laughed at. And he's turned his administration into the laughingstock of the globe right now.
And there's also a tweet for everything. There's a tweet about Trump meeting with, Obama, if he had met with Kim Jong-un. There's a tweet about Obama if he had gone to war with Iran. It's just ridiculous, man.
Yeah. On that note, actually, it'll bring us to our fake news of the week, which is going to be North Korean related and also Fox News related. I saw this clip pop up online. The group Now This made an excellent, excellent video that I'll link to in the footnotes showing how Fox News has done a complete 180 on their coverage of North Korea and U.S. relations. And that change came strictly because Barack Obama wasn't president anymore.
Yeah.
Now Donald Trump's doing it.
I feel like 180 is not enough to say, but I know that's the thing.
It's drastic. So let's just play a little clip here that's going to start with Barack Obama being asked what he would do as president. Would he meet with a country like North Korea?
Would you, as president, meet with the leaders of a country like North Korea? Obama extraordinarily said, I'd meet with him.
Senator Obama made his intentions crystal clear on the campaign trail.
I will meet, not just with our friends, but with our enemies.
President Obama likes talking to dictators.
He would meet with some of these madmen without any preconditions.
You know, I'm going to reach out to these crazy people around the world and try to get things done.
Yeah.
I think that's a mistake.
Obama is bowing and scraping before dictators.
What is Team Obama doing establishing formal contacts with these people?
So that's some various clips of Fox News coverage and some clips from prominent GOP members like Mike Huckabee and Sarah Palin. And everyone's bashing Obama for saying that he would meet with not only our allies, obviously, but he'd meet with our enemies, too, to negotiate with them.
Under certain conditions.
Right, under certain conditions. Now, here's a little more from Fox News about when Donald Trump does exactly what Obama talked about.
A remarkable turnaround in relations between two historic adversaries.
The commander-in-chief's leadership is now leading to a major foreign policy breakthrough.
Another stunning
Donald Trump breakthrough.
President Trump scoring a big win.
It's time to celebrate a great victory when it happens.
President Trump proves the experts wrong again and scores a stunning diplomatic triumph.
That clip goes on and on for 3 minutes, exposing the hypocrisy of these Fox News anchors.
Propaganda.
And that's really all this is, because just because Obama said it, a Democrat, it's the worst thing in the world. But when Donald Trump says it, it's a major diplomatic triumph. It goes back further in that clip to knock Obama for things like negotiating with Iran.
And let's be fair, Obama wasn't perfect on that stuff.
Definitely
not. Sitting here saying that he was a home run in that, because there was a lot of holes in the way we dealt with this. They weren't quite this deep, but there were some holes.
Yeah, they specifically in the Iran deal in Fox News knock Obama for not having a precondition to sitting down and talking. They knocked Obama for that, but will refuse to knock Donald Trump for speaking with North Korea without any preconditions. It's so hypocritical. It's ridiculous. I don't think we even need to say much more about that.
And again,
this clip speaks for itself.
Not just speaking. He went into North Korea.
Yeah, literally stepped foot on their soil, crossed their border.
But it gets worse for Fox News. And generally, we don't have two fake news of the week or two back-to-back clips. But Tucker Carlson doubled down on this. He decided to legitimize some of these dictators with these atrocities.
Absolutely, yeah. So Tucker Carlson, who also attended this North Korean meeting.
I saw this.
Like, is he our new national security advisor? What the hell is going on? Why is he there?
Where was Bolton?
Yeah. Bolton was there at some point.
Trump sent him home.
But yeah, right.
Why?
Very strange. Tucker Carlson stayed there. And we know Tucker Carlson has Trump's ear, and that reports are that they speak on a pretty regular basis. And he is advising our president, this man who has no official capacity, much like Donald Trump's daughter, was not an elected official, yet has the president's ear on a daily basis, is helping shape American foreign policy. That should scare everybody.
No, you really want to scare him? Let's play the clip on what he thinks about.
Yeah, let's go ahead and play that clip from Tucker Carlson regarding Trump
and just running countries,
cozying up with North Korea.
Defending the North Korean regime, which is a monstrous regime. It's the last really Stalinist regime in the world. It's a disgusting place, obviously. And so there's no defending it. On the other hand, you know, you got to be honest about what it means to lead a country. It means killing people. Not on the scale that the North Koreans do, but a lot of countries commit atrocities, including a number that we're closely allied with. So, you know, I'm not a relativist or anything, but it's important to be honest about that.
The nature of leading country is killing people.
According to Tucker Carlson.
Not on the level of North Korea.
The man with the most punchable face I've ever seen.
I told you, I kind of want to like the guy. And then she like this comes out. Because like, I do think he's a troll to the highest level. I don't believe he believes any of this stuff.
No, he's in it for ratings and for money.
Yeah.
Look at him back on the CNN crossfire days to what he is now. I'm sure he's always been borderline white supremacist, Tucker Carlson. But now it's on full display. He just stands for the president so hard that now he's like, well, you know what? We can excuse North Korea for killing people because that's what it means to be a leader.
I know we're wrapping this up and I don't want to get too deep in this, but it's really scary the roads we're going down with the camps, with pundits like Carlson saying this, because they're trying to normalize these things. They're trying to normalize countries killing journalists, political opponents, citizens, putting people in camps. And, you know, when stuff happened in Germany at the beginning, I'm sure people saw and were like, well, it's not going to go that far, right? It's not going to be the worst atrocity in the history of humanity. We just have to be really careful here because it's happening in sometimes little steps, sometimes really big steps, like what's happening at our border. But pay real attention to what's going on here, about the rhetoric, about the words that are coming out of these people's mouths, because they're slowly trying to make this okay one little hit at a time.
I think that says it all. So I'm going to close out there. And that'll bring us to the end of our episode with some rapid fire things to keep an eye on. Number one on our list to follow up on what's been going on in Iran. Iran, since we've pulled out of our nuclear agreement deal with them, has said, you know what, fuck it. America's not going to be part of the agreement. We're going to start enriching nuclear materials again. And now they've exceeded that threshold that was originally established by the Obama administration in the Iranian nuclear deal. And that's certainly going to escalate tensions across the board. The Trump administration, I'm sure, will use this as justification to say, look, they're not abiding by the agreement, so we need to do something drastic, ignoring the fact that we backed out of the agreement first. Talk about Mayor Pete actually raised $24.8 million in the second quarter. That's up from $7.8 million in the first quarter, with 400,000 unique donors. So he's clearly seen a bump in his popularity. That's something to keep an eye on, certainly.
He's a legit guy on the stage at this point.
Yep. We also have some news about the concentration camps going on. U.S. District Judge Dolly G. out of California rules against the Trump administration to let doctors into the concentration camps immediately. They're saying doctors should be allowed in, stop blocking them.
Weird request.
You shouldn't have to even bring this to a court, first of all.
Rod.
But William Barr requested more time for the Department of Justice to respond to all of this before allowing doctors in, which, holy shit.
I can't even.
That's it. Let doctors in. In some local news, we have Donald Trump praising New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy for abandoning his tax on millionaires. So that's how you know it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
You got Donald Trump signing up on board with it to a Democratic plan.
You don't really want that.
Bad move, Phil. And in light of this past weekend marked the end of Pride Month. So we had a lot of Pride parades going on, including major ones in the local area in Hoboken and New York City. And just to illustrate how much this has grown since pretty much the Stonewall times, right? We have in 1970, just about 1,000 people attended the Pride Parade in New York City. This past weekend, we had over 150,000 people on that parade route, which, good for them.
Great.
Support gay rights. Be a good ally. I don't know if I can say more than that. Just
support people.
Be a good human being.
Yeah. Be on the right side of history.
Then finally, just again, since we've done it the last few episodes, U.S. women's soccer continues to dominate. So they beat France 2-1 last week, and they're going to play England on Tuesday. This episode will be dropping later in the week, so hopefully by the time this episode drops, you've already had some celebratory beers over their victory over England.
U.S., do this for our country, because I can't wait till you win this thing. I don't want to jinx you right now, but and you tell Trump, no thanks, and you take up AOC's invite to come meet with the House. It's going to be fantastic.
Rapinoe is queen. I'm just going to say that.
She's amazing. She's the new American flag.
So that's all we have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at @drinking_libpod. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for the Drinking Liberally podcast group. Or follow us on our website at www.drinkingliberallypod.com. Of course, rate and review us on iTunes if you check us out there. It goes a long way to getting us in front of more people. So we truly appreciate everyone that's done so already. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Cheers.
I do want to leave the listeners with President Carter's thoughts on Donald Trump. We had a little audio. Enjoy this. We feel the same, and have a great weekend.
Russia has been proven by our intelligence community to have interfered with one of our human rights, which is the right of free and fair elections. Yeah. What's your reaction? How should we deal with Russia?
Well, the president himself should condemn it, admit that it happened, which I think 16 of intelligence agencies have already agreed to say. And there's no doubt that the Russians did interfere in the election. And I think the interference, although not yet quantified, if fully investigated, would show that Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf.
So do you believe President Trump is an illegitimate president?
Based on what I just said, which I can't retract.
Thank you.